Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about Texas Instruments, which is a global manufacturer of semiconductors and electronic products. We'll review the company's 10K annual report to get a better idea of its business model and its reportable segments. After that, we'll review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. We'll look at the company's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. And finally, look at the expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in Texas Instruments at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment? So let's dive in and review Texas Instruments. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that Texas Instruments filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2020. And on the next page, the company provides a business overview. Texas Instruments states that it designs and makes semiconductors that it sells to electronic designers and manufacturers all over the world. TI has two reportable segments, the analog segment and its embedded processing segment, and reports its remaining businesses in the other segment. In 2020, it generated $14.46 billion of revenue. Next, the company talks about how its strategy to maximize free cash flow per share growth has three elements. The first element of its strategy is a business model that is focused on analog and embedded processing products and built around four competitive advantages. The four sustainable competitive advantages are a strong foundation of manufacturing and technology, a broad portfolio of analog and embedded processing products, the reach of its marketing channels, and diversity and longevity of its products, markets, and customer positions. The second element of its strategy to maximize free cash flow per share growth is disciplined allocation of capital. This includes selecting R&D projects, developing new capabilities like TI.com, investing in new manufacturing capabilities, and so forth. The third element of its strategy is efficiency, which TI thinks of as constantly striving for more output for every dollar spent. Lastly, TI states that it believes that its business model, with the combined effect of its four competitive advantages, sets TI apart from its peers. Next, on page 29 of this report, the company provides us more detail about its two reportable segments, which are its analog and embedded processing segments. TI explains how the analog semiconductors change real-world signals such as sound, temperature, pressure, or images by conditioning them, amplifying them, and often converting them to a stream of digital data that can be processed by other semiconductors such as embedded processors. TI then explains how the embedded processing products are the digital brains of many types of electronic equipment, as they're designed to handle specific tasks and can be optimized for various combinations of performance, power, and cost, depending on the application. On the next page, the company provides us a revenue breakdown across those operating segments. We can see that for the year 2020, about $10,886 million out of the $14.486 million of total revenue came from its analog segment, which means that about 75% of the company's total revenue came from its analog segment. When we look at the operating profit, the analog segment accounted for about 83% of the company's total operating profit for the year 2020. And when we compare the analog segment's operating profit to the analog segment's revenue, we can see that about 45.1% of the analog segment's revenue becomes that segment's operating profit. Next, TI provides us a revenue breakdown across geographic areas. TI points out that the geographic revenue information does not necessarily reflect end demand by geography because its products tend to be shipped to the locations where its customers manufacture their products. In this table provided below, we can see that TI sales to its customers in Asia accounted for about 9.5 out of the total $14.5 billion of revenue. TI then specifies that its revenue from products shipped into China was $8 billion, $7.2 billion, and $7 billion in 2020, 2019, and 2018 respectively. What this means is, for the year 2020, about $8 billion out of the total $9.5 billion of its sales in Asia came from its customers in China. Finally, looking at the company's plant, property, and equipment. For the year 2020, majority of TI's plant, property, and equipment are located within the United States, as we can see that about 62% of the company's total plant, property, and equipment is located in the United States. Now that we have a brief understanding of TI's business model, its strategy, its two reportable segments, and the revenue breakdown, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at the key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Texas Instruments. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that comes in via sales. Back in 2011, Texas Instruments' revenue was about $13.7 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $14.4 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's revenue to be staying steady or increasing. And in the case of Texas Instruments, we can see that the revenue over the past few years has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the operating income,
The operating income is what we get when we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about $3.4 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $6.1 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's operating income has slowly been trending upwards, and we can see that despite the revenue being steady, the company is able to increase its operating income, which tells us that Texas Instruments is really good at keeping its cost of goods and operating expenses in check. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, TI's net income was about $2.2 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $5.6 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has been trending upwards, and that is certainly a trend that we want to see as shareholders. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2011, TI paid out about $0.56 per share as dividend, and for the year 2020, it paid out about $3.72 per share as dividend. Texas Instruments has been hiking its dividend every year for the past 10 years. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, Texas Instruments had about 1,171 million shares outstanding, and for the trailing 12 months, it has 931 million shares outstanding. TI's shares outstanding number has been decreasing every year for the past 10 years, and that tells us that the company has been buying back its shares, which actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. After that, looking at the book value per share, the book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, the company's book value was about $9.68 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about $11.01 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2011, TI's free cash flow was about $2,440 million. And for the year 2020, it was about $5,490 million. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows from my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of $5,490 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, TI's net margin was about 16.28%, and for the year 2020, it was about 38.69%. What this means is every $100 that TI brought in via sales in the year 2020, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had about $38.69 left as pure profit. After that, looking at the company's return on equity, the return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, the company's return on equity was about 20.91%, and for the year 2020, it was about 61.84%. The reason why we're seeing the high and increasing return on equity numbers is because first, the company's net income has been increasing, and secondly, the company is buying back its shares, which actually decreases the equity portion on the balance sheet, hence inflating the company's return on equity number. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives us an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, Texas Instruments' return on invested capital was about 13.87%, and for the year 2020, it was about 37%. The company's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 7.3%. And since the company's return on invested capital is much greater than the company's weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage compares the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 71 times, and for the year 2020, it was about 33 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5. A current ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company has enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was about 2.24, and for the latest quarter, it's at 6.12. Next, looking at the quick ratio, The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was about 1.28, and for the latest quarter, it's at 4.86. Both the current and quick ratio show that TI has more than enough oxygen in its system to survive for another 12 months. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage ratio tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was about 1.87, and for the latest quarter, it's about 1.93. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. Back in 2011, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.38, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.61. TI's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios are comparable to those of its competitor Infineon Technologies. However, these ratios are much better than the competitor Qualcomm's. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day TI recognizes its sale to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, TI's day sales outstanding was about 40.7 days, and for the year 2020, it was about 31.4 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing, and we can see that over the past few years, the company's day sales outstanding number has stayed fairly consistent. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number are trending upwards, as that tells us that the company may be aggressive with its accounting as it's trying to recognize its sales sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on the income statement. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives us an idea of how many days does TI's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2011, the company's day's inventory was about 86.7 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 139 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day's inventory to be staying steady or decreasing. However, in the case of TI, we can see that over the past 10 years, the company's day's inventory has been increasing. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives us an idea of how many days does TI take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, the company's payables period was about 32.66 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 28.23 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing, which is what we're seeing in the case of TI. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period have been increasing, as it tells us that the company may be trying to hold on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives an idea of how many times does TI's inventory go through its system in a calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's inventory turnover was about 4.21 times, and for the year 2020, it's about 2.62 times. Ideally, we want to see the company's inventory turnover to be staying steady or increasing. However, in the case of TI, the inventory turnover has been decreasing. In other words, the company was a lot more efficient with its inventory in 2011 than it was in 2020. Now let's compare TI's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. TI has a price-to-earnings of 28.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 26.5. TI's price-to-book is at 17.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.4. TI's price-to-sales is at 11.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.2. TI's price-to-cash flow is at 24.6, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.6. And finally, the dividend yield. TI has a dividend yield of 2.1%, whereas S&P 500's yield is about 1.5%. We can see that on all these valuation metrics, other than the dividend yield, TI is overvalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at TI's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted Texas Instruments' 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $5,490 million. I'm assuming that TI's annual growth of free cash flow will be at 7%. What this means is I expect TI's free cash flow to grow at 7% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I expect this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 5%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect TI's free cash flow to grow at 5%. The company has 931 million shares outstanding and has long-term debt of $6,248 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value to be about $135.5 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price of about $190 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 40% above the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $47 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $132 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $135.5. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that TI is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $44 per share. And if we disregard the debt, in other words, if we think that TI is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for the company to even worry about paying its debt back, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $142.2 per share. Finally, we know that the company's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 7.3%. And if we add 1% of marginal safety on top of that and make our discount rate 8.3%, then we get our intrinsic value to be about $212.8 per share. And in this situation, the company's current stock price is trading about 11% below the company's intrinsic value. Hey guys, now let's look at Texas Instruments' expected rate of return calculation. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the past 10 years. We can see that the company's free cash flow have been trending upwards. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that TI's free cash flow will grow at 10%, a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 5%, and a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 2%. These are the potential free cash flow raises that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is at 931 million shares, at the current stock price of about $190 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 2.8% on this investment. What this means is if you were to purchase a share of Texas Instruments at the current stock price of about $190 per share and hold the security through 2060, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 2.8% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We briefly went over Texas Instruments' 10K annual report to get a better idea of its business model. We saw that Texas Instruments has two operating segments. The first is its analog segment, and the second is its embedded processing segment. In the year 2020, the analog segment brought in about 75% of the company's total revenue. Next, we looked at the key ratios. We saw that the company's revenue over the past 10 years has stayed fairly consistent. The company's operating income and net income, on the other hand, have been growing. This tells us that Texas Instruments is getting better at streamlining its processes, which helps lower its cost of goods and other expenses. After that, we saw that Texas Instruments has been hiking its dividend every year for the past 10 years and has been buying back its shares every year for the past 10 years. Both of these actions of hiking dividends and buying back shares is very shareholder friendly. Next, we saw that the company's return on equity over the past 10 years has always been greater than 8%. The high return on equity numbers are driven by the fact that its net income is increasing and that the company is buying back its shares, which actually decreases the equity portion on the balance sheet. TI's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, which tells us that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Next, we saw that the company's interest coverage is greater than 5x. When we looked at the financial health and liquidity ratios, both the current and quick ratio pointed out that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. That is, the company has more than enough oxygen in its system to survive for another 12 months. TI's financial leverage over the past 10 years has stayed fairly consistent. Its debt-to-equity ratio has been growing. However, the debt-to-equity is still less than 1. TI's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios are comparable to its competitor Infineon Technologies. Next, when we looked at the efficiency ratios, we saw that the company was more efficient at going through its inventory 10 years ago than it is today. Next, we saw that on most of the current valuation metrics, Texas Instruments was overvalued when compared to the S&P 500. Next, when we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis using a 10% discount rate, we found that the intrinsic value came to about $135.5 per share. However, when we dropped the company's discount rate to 8.3%, we found that the intrinsic value came to about $213 per share, which would mean that the current stock price is trading about 11% below the company's intrinsic value. When we performed the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if you were to purchase a share of Texas Instruments at the current stock price of about $190 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 2.8% on this investment. Overall, Texas Instruments is fundamentally a strong company. Texas Instruments appears to have a long roadway of growth ahead as the company continues to spend more than 10% of its revenue on research and development. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Texas Instruments interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.